Shvi'is, Perek Zayin, Mishnah Aleph, 7:1. The following Mishnah sets forth what it calls the Klal Gadol, the great principle that applies to Shvi'is. The reason Gadol is used, great here, which is not often the case in the Mishnahs, is because, says the Tiferet Yisrael, because of the severity, the enormity of the consequences of failing to keep Shemitah properly. So we have Klal Gadol by Shabbos, because of the enormity of Shabbos and its desecration, and here again by Shvi'is, as opposed to other Mishnahs, which talks about general principles of Klal in general, not a Klal Gadol. Now, to understand what this Mishnah is driving at, which is to explain to what kinds of produce the halachas of Shemitah and Biur apply, you have to appreciate that the Torah says that Hashem gives us the food for achila, for eating, but that Chazal understood that achila includes any kind of consumption, where, like eating in one's mouth, the destruction of the foodstuff or the vegetable matter is concurrent. It happens at the exact same time that the benefit is being taken from it. So that means eating by a person, of course, you take the apple and you eat it, and concurrent with the destruction of the apple as it's being consumed is the benefit of the apple, because you're eating that apple and you're getting benefit from it. That would be true for feeding animals. That would be true for dye stuffs, D-Y-E. When you're dyeing material, you're extracting the dye out of the vegetable matter, and it's being put into whatever you're trying to dye, the color. There are other applications as well, like, for example, putting oil on your skin, detergents, and so on. A very important notable exception is wood, firewood, etc. So Chazal understood that firewood and its burning is a two-step process. That is to say, it's not concurrent, simultaneous, its destruction with the benefit it confers. They're two separate stages. First, the wood is burned and turns to, you know, to coal, and the heat is released. That's step one. And then step two is the heat goes and cooks your bread, or whatever the story is, warms up your oven. That's step two. And since they're not happening simultaneously, there's two separate steps. First, the destruction of the wood, and then the cooking or heating or baking, whatever's going on. So, unlike regular food, animal food, dye stuffs, etc., wood does not have Kedusha Shvi'is, because that reason, it's not consumed in the same way that food is consumed, etc. So our mission is going to set forth a basic principle, which is any vegetable matter which is consumed, either by people, animals, dye stuffs, etc., even if the food is not normally cultivated, it's not a first choice in terms of a food or animal food or fodder, but if it works, then it works. And if it is consumed from time to time as animal food or person food, etc., then it constitutes something that is ne'echal eaten, and therefore it has Kedusha Shvi'is. The Mishnah will cite some very unusual examples. The reason why is a combination of factors. One is because we want to emphasize that even though these are quite unusual foods to eat, they can be eaten, and therefore they do have the status of food that has Kedusha Shvi'is. And second of all, speaks out the Tiferet Yisrael, that if you'd have normal vegetables that are grown, that grow in a single year, so there's this Isser Svichin, we've said it a number of times, the prohibition against having and consuming and harvesting vegetables, etc., plants that are normally planted and harvested in a single year, because people were cheating the system, and even though the Torah allows for things to grow naturally, people were saying, we're planting these vegetables and then, or grain, whatever it is, and then claiming, oh, it grew naturally. This is wild vegetable, wild grain. And so therefore, all things that are planted and harvested in a single year are forbidden under this category called Svichin. And that Isser Derabanan doesn't apply to foods that are not normally cultivated. So our Mishnah, to avoid the issue of talking about foodstuffs that you couldn't anyways eat, because there's an Isser Svichin on them, and we'll pick foods that are not normally cultivated, and therefore they're not subject to the Isser Svichin, and therefore they're foods that people could pick in the Shemitah year and eat, yet the Mishnah warns that they are subject to the restrictions that Shemitah food has, including the Kedusha of Shvi'is, the Kedusha itself. The second point the Mishnah will make has to do with Biur. We've seen Biur also a couple of times already. Biur is the obligation that when the produce is no longer available in the wild, because the Pasuk says it's for the consumption of people as well as for the Behem and Chaya, so if animals. So in the event that you have foods that are no longer available in the wild for the animals, so then One may not retain any of that food in his home. He has to do biur on it, which means removing it from his house. According to most Mefarshim, it means to remove it from his house and then declare it hefker, ownerless. The Rambam famously understands that biur requires destruction of the food. Be that as it may, our mission is saying the basic principle is vegetable matter that's consumed, whether it's food for people or animals or dyes, etc. If there's a time in the calendar when a particular foodstuff is no longer available for the animals to forage on, because let's say as the winter goes on, it kind of rots in the ground and becomes inedible. So then there is a time for biur for this produce, in addition to it having kedusha shvius, as opposed to certain kinds of vegetables can live in the ground throughout the entire winter and not rot, you know, like an onion bulb, or we saw luf bulbs and so on. So if you have an onion which can stay in the ground the whole winter long and survive just fine, so then there's never going to be a time for biur, because there's never a time when animals who are foraging in the wild couldn't find these onions in the ground. So our mission is going to say, provided that food meets those two criteria, number one, that it's consumed either by people, animals, dyestuffs, etc., and number two, that there is a time when it's no longer available in the wild, then it's subject to the halachas of kedusha shvius as well as the halachas of biur. The mission just makes one more point, which is that when something has kedusha shvius, the money used to purchase that foodstuff will also have kedusha shvius, and similarly, that money will have the obligation of biur when the time of biur kicks in, that particular food that was purchased with the money. So that is to say, for example, if I'm selling my whatever food that's in the list here, one item in the list is luf leaves. So I'm selling my luf leaves from a wild luf to someone else. You can't do business with it. And we'll see then subsequent Mishnayos, the restrictions on commercial activity, but I can sell it for my cost price, etc. So when I sell that leaf to someone else for his consumption, so the money that I get in exchange, that one shekel I get, that shekel has kedusha shvius, which means I can't use it for purchasing things that are other than shvius stuff. And when I do purchase it, like let's say I buy some fish, the kedusha will transfer from the coin onto the fish, and the fish will then have this status of kedusha, which can be consumed, and then that will solve that problem. However, if I don't spend the money, or I spend the money on the fish, and then I don't eat the fish in time before the biur kicks in, then there'll be an obligation for the money or the fish, if that's what I purchased with the money, to have biur done to it, removed from the house, and being mafkir, making ownerless, or destroying it. So on that point, it's important to make a distinction between something that has intrinsic kedusha, the fruit itself, perishvius, those produce, there's no way to get the kedusha out of it. It's built into it, it's part of it, because it was born and grew in the seventh year. So when you sell it or trade it, the kedusha stays. Whereas the other, which I'll call, for lack of a better term, extrinsic kedusha, which goes on the money, or whatever the foodstuff you traded, that's just temporary and can be traded on and moved on. So for example, again, if I have this luf leaves that are kedusha shvius, and I trade my steak for your luf leaves, so the steak, the luf leaves, those leaves from that luf plant, retain kedusha shvius forever. But in doing the trade, so now that invests kedusha shvius into the meat as well. And if later on we do a trade, exchange of the meat for potatoes, so then the meat gets deconsecrated, and the kedusha of kedusha shvius now is invested in the potatoes, etc. Okay, with all that background, we agree the Mishnah straightforwardly now, because I said the whole thing outside. The Mishnah says inside, Klal gadol amru b'shvius, they, the rabbis, said a great principle with respect to the halachah of shvius, which is, if a produce is A, kol shu ma'achal adam, food that is either food for human consumption, even if it's al yidei rechak, even if it's, you know, under pressing circumstances, u'ma'achal behema, here this vav doesn't mean and, it means or. So if it's either food for people or food for animals, again, this vav is or, u memin hatsovim, or it's a type of vegetable material that's used for dyeing, then this vav is the and. And it's miskayim ba'aretz. This vav is ve'eno miskayim ba'aretz. And it is not, it does not last in the ground the entire winter. It rots and goes away, and therefore it's not always available, and therefore it'll have the biur status. So the mission says, if it meets those two criteria, being food for people, animals, or dye stuff, and it doesn't last in the ground, then yesh lo shvius, this is the kind of produce that has the kedusha of shvius, v'ladama of shvius, And the money that's used to purchase such food or dye stuff will have the Kedusha Shvi'a as well with those restrictions. Yesh lo biur, the food will have the requirement of biur, of reading it from the house, because it's not always available. And ladama biur, the money used to purchase such a food will also have the requirement of biur, of removal from the house if it's not spent in time. Ve'ezes, and we have examples. So again, the examples we're going to give are really strange foods that are not normally cultivated to sidestep the issue of svichin. The bartender speaks out this first case, the ale haluf hashota, the leaf of the wild loof. Again, loof, A-R-U-M, arum, whatever that is, as I explained before. So this is my example. So the wild loof leaves are not normally cultivated, and therefore that's why they're on the list here as an example. The bartender speaks out also that there's a Mishnah in Uktsin, which talks about how wild loof leaves are not really edible unless you cook them a lot. So the point is in the Mishnah here, yeah, so cook them a lot and then they become food for people. So they're eligible for Kedusha Shvi'as, even if they're not subject to the normal restrictions of the Isser, the prohibition against Svicha. Also on the list is Va'ala Hadandana, leaves from mint, nana in Arabic, mint. Va'ulshin, ulshin, article translates as endives. Endives are kind of a delicious but a bit bitter, whitish, like lettuce, you know. But creation are leeks, good old leeks. Vaha regila, whatever that is. Vanetza chalav, literally means the milky blossom. That's how Archer translates it, but I have my doubts. Whatever it is. Umachal behema, as far as food for animals, we have examples like chochem bedardarim. That means thorns and thistles. So again, normally you don't feed your animals thorns and thistles, but you can feed camels these things, especially if they have nothing else to give them. So they merit the status of animal food, even if it's an oppressing situation, like this previous food from before for human consumption, and they have Kedusha Shvi'as. And finally, Umin Hatsovim, as far as dye stuffs go, we have Svichei Istis. We've seen this before. Istis is woad, W-O-A-D, uses a blue dye. So Svichei Istis, things, you know, little aftergrowths of the Istis plant, as well as Kotza. Kotza, article translates as safflower, or used for red dye. We have safflower oil a lot. And I'll take the word for it, that Kotza is safflower. Yeshlem Shvi'as, these are the kinds of foods that have Shvi'as, Ulodimein Shvi'as, and the money used to purchase them also have Kedusha Shvi'as. Yeshlem Bior, they have an obligation of Bior. When the time comes, they're no longer available in the wild, you must destroy them or remove them from your house at least and make them Hefker. Vladimein Bior, if you don't spend the money that's used to purchase these food or dye stuffs has a requirement of Bior as well. Shvi'as Perk Zayin, Mishnah Base, 7-2. So this Mishnah, the version we have in front of us, is not the version that is found in the Yerushalmi and most of the Rishonim. There's one word, not, she'eno, that changes everything. Although the Rambam does have the version that we have in front of us, I'm going to explain it according to the version that most of the Rishonim had, like the Yerushalmi, and that will be changing one word here. And I think that just makes it, the Mishnah, immeasurably more easy to understand. And I think that is the right thing to do for our shiur here. So I'll point out where the change is now, and you can look at it on your own, how the Rambam learns it in the Perash Mishnayos, if you want to learn according to the Gerson in front of you. The Mishnah says, Va'od klal ech acher amru. They have another principle, which was kol, and now the word she'enu I'm taking out. Here it says, kol she'enu ma'achal adam ma'achal be'emo min etzovim. Anything that isn't food for people or animals or there for dye stuff, but I'm taking that out. I'm now having it kol shehu, any food that is, in fact, like the previous Mishnah, Ma'achal Adam, food for people, Ma'achal Behema, food for animals, Umin Hatsovin, or it's dye stuff. So that's why it's going to have normal Kedusha Shvi'as, because it's a regular food, or there for consumption. But Umiskayim Ba'aretz, the difference, and now the only difference, as far as the way I'm reading it, and the previous Mishnah is, this list is going to be a list of foods and food-like things that, while edible, are always available in the ground, and therefore they are not going to have the biur issue. They'll, yes, have Kedusha Shvi'as because they're there for consumption, human consumption, animal consumption, dye stuff, etc. But since they are mitkayem ba'aretz, they do persist in the ground through the winter. They're always available. There's no time for biur, and therefore they're exempt from biur. So the Mishnah says, in such a case, indeed, yesh lo shvi'as, such foods have the restrictions of shvi'as, uladam of shvi'as, as do the money used to purchase such vegetable matter. Ein lo biur, but they will not have the obligation of biur since they're always available. The ein lo dam of biur, and nor will the money used to purchase these foodstuffs have a requirement of biur. Ezehu, so examples, what might they be? The Mishnah gives some examples. It says, Iker haluf hashota, instead of the leaves of the wild luf from the previous Mishnah, which do wither and die and go away in the wintertime, the Iker, the bulb of this luf, which again I told you before is something like a cousin of a onion or whatever, a leek, so it's something else, an arum. Since the bulb at the bottom always persists through the winter, there's no time for beer, but it's edible. And again, these are only items that are quite unusual. We're having unusual items because we want them to be edible, but only edible under unusual circumstances, and that's why they're not subject to the separate prohibition of Sfichin. Same goes, ve'ikr hadandana, the root of mint, the arkabanin, whatever that is, the chalbitzin, whatever that is, the buchria, whatever that is. Those are all kinds of foods which people normally don't eat, but they could eat if they wanted to under present circumstances. So that's why they're considered ma'achal adam. They're human food because people could eat them. But since they're not cultivated normally, they're not subject to the restrictions of svichin. And since they are available all year round, they don't die out altogether. So therefore, they're not subject to biur. Now we have examples for mintsovim, dye stuffs, hapua. We had pua before. That was madder, M-A-D-D-E-R. Translated art school, it's a red dye, and this is the baharichpa, a different kind of dye, and both these dyes, or the plants from which they come, are available year-round, so no biur. Therefore, yesh lehem shvias, they do have kedusha shvias, v'lo damein shvias, and the money used to purchase them also has kedusha shvias. Ein lehem biur, however, they do not have an obligation to be ever removed from the home, v'lo damein biur, and the money used to purchase these things also doesn't have a biur restriction on it at all, no time to actually get out your house. Reb Meir is going to argue, Reb Meir is going to say, listen, Damein Misabrin Ad Rosh Hashanah. Excuse me, Misbarin Ad Rosh Hashanah. The money used to purchase the items that are exempt on this list from Biur, still the money has an obligation of Biur. Mitzbarin, Misbarin means they become Biur required. If you haven't gotten them spent by Rosh Hashanah. The concern that Reb Meir has is, since Reb Meir holds the foods have kedusha shvias, and therefore the money is kedusha shvias, we don't want the money lying around indefinitely and getting mixed up, since it has restrictions, and therefore he says the time limit is to spend them by Rosh Hashanah. However, Amrulo, the rabbi, disagreed. They said, Lehen ein biur, the actual foodstuffs or dye stuffs don't have biur, how could it be? Kol v'chomer l'daman, all the more so, the money used to purchase them shouldn't have an obligation of biur. And that's the halacha, like the Tanna Kamma, that these foods and the money do have kedusha shvias, but do not have biur, including the money. There's no biur required on them, whatever the money can sit around. Shvias, Perek Zayin, Mishnah Gimel, 7:3. We just established in the previous Kalb Mishnayos that vegetable matter that's used and consumed by humans or animals or as dye stuff, that's a legitimate use of peru shvias, of fruits that have the kedusha shvias. And it carries with it the restrictions of Shmias. Now, amongst those restrictions are both the wasting as well as doing commerce. So this mission will first talk about some items which are less familiar. Klipe Rimon, the rind of a pomegranate, Panet Shelo, and the calyx, little like flower-like, star-like thing coming off of the pomegranate. Those are used to make dye, and therefore they have Kedusha Shvias. Klipe Agozim, these are the husks around the walnut. Not talking about the shell. The shell is like wood and doesn't have kedusha shvias, but the husk, like the fibrous husk around the walnut, is used for dye stuff, and therefore it also has kedusha shvias. V'ha'galinen, galinen are pits. So in the time of the Mishnah, they would feed pits, like date pits, to their camels, so that would be have kedusha shvias. Or if they would have a way to eat, let's say olive pits, which it seems they did in the Mishnah time, that would mean it would also be food. And therefore have kedusha shvias. And that's what the Mishnah says. Yesh lam shvias, such vegetable matter has kedusha shvias. And if one would sell it in a permissible way, then v'ledamein shvias. The money used to purchase those pits or those rinds of pomegranates, etc., would now get the kedusha also of shvias and have to be treated accordingly. The next part of the Mishnah now transitions into the topic of doing commerce with peros shvias, which is disallowed. And one may not do business with them. And that we have to differentiate between goods and services, providing services in any amount using payroll shvius and getting any kind of compensation is doing business. And that being the case, the Mishnah says, Hatzaba, if a person is a dyer, means he makes his living dyeing fabric. Tzovei la'atzmo, he's permitted to dye his own clothing, his own stuff for his own personal use. That's not business, not permissible. But v'lo yitzba b'schar, he may not dye fabric for anyone else in exchange for compensation, because any amount of compensation is doing business with the dye stuff material, which is has kedusha shvius. She'en osn schar b'peros shvius, as the Mishnah says, one may not do business with vegetable matter that has kedusha shvius. Similarly, but not related to shvius at all, v'lo b'bchoros, a person can't do business with b'choros. A b'chor is a firstborn male that's born to a cow, goat, or sheep. The proper thing to do with that, if there's a base of mikdash and the animal is whole and sound, the baby is to bring it as a korban. A b'chor is one of the eight types of zvachim. It's brought as a korban. It belongs to the kohen, and the kohen will eat that b'chor as kachim kalim. If the b'chor is born and it has some kind of mum, a blemish, which disallows it from brought as a korban, so if it's a temporary blemish, so then one just waits until the blemish resolves itself, and then the animal can be brought as a korban, as a b'chor. If it's a permanent blemish, a mum kavua, so then the animal remains the property of a kohen. It has to be given to a kohen, and the kohen is allowed to eat it without bringing it as a korban. And in fact, the kohen can invite his friends to eat it with him. There's no restriction on non-kohanim eating a b'chor. It's just that it belongs monetarily to the kohen. However, while eating the meat of a b'chor is permissible, working such an animal, a voda, or shearing such an animal for the wool, say a b'chor sheep, so that's a giza, those are forbidden activities and one may not do it. So the Mishnah here is saying that a person can't go into business being like a clearinghouse, a distributor of permissible b'choros. Can't tell kohanim, you know, if you have a b'chor that's a balmum, I'll give you a pretty penny for it and sell it on. The reason why Chazal didn't want that, says the Bartanur, is because b'chor ros will be lingering about, and they'll end up inadvertently perhaps getting shorn or worked, and that would be an issur from the Torah. So since we don't want them lingering about, we don't want like a central marketplace where they would sort of amass, waiting to be sold, etc. And therefore, the Mishnah here is saying that one may not do business with b'choros. A kohen who happens to have a b'chor could sell it. And that's important, as we'll see that distinction going on with shvius in a few moments. The same way, if I happen to have a stroller in my garage and I want to now get rid of it, and I put it on eBay, I didn't now become a stroller merchant. I'm not doing business with strollers. I don't work in strollers. I happen to be selling a stroller, or even two or three. So too, if a kohen happens to have a b'chor he's not going to eat, he could sell that animal or the meat of that animal without any restriction, but he can't go into formal business doing it. Also worth noting is that since the concern is that the living animals will be left lingering about and come to be worked or shorn, once the animals have been shechted and they're just meat, then one actually could do business with them, says the Bartanura, because there's no fear of that anymore. The Mishnah also says, v'lo b'trumos, a person similarly cannot go into business selling truma. Truma is referring to trumos, or the various gifts like truma, challah, trumas meiser, etc., that are given to the kohen. Again, they are property of the kohen. Unlike b'choros, however, only kohanim may eat truma. A kohen cannot invite his next door neighbor to join him in eating a truma dinner, because truma is limited just to kohanim under the penalty of misa b'dei shamayim, premature death. So, that being the case, and truma has other restrictions as well. It's restricted that it's forbidden from the Torah to make it tameh, etc. So that being the case, Chazal didn't want truma to be amassed and ultimately perhaps come to some sort of, you know, become tameh or whatever the story is, inadvertently, or be eaten by a non-kohen for that matter. And that being the case, so Chazal here is saying that we don't want anybody going to business being a clearinghouse of selling truma. That's inappropriate and would be a recipe for trouble, and therefore the Torah forbids it. Excuse me, the rabbis forbade it. The Mishnah continues to say also, velo, a person may not go into business formally, benevelos, velo betrefus, velo betshkatzim, velo beramasim. with not kosher food. Yerushalmi speaks out, we're talking about foods that are asher min haTorah. Any food that is forbidden by the Torah, midoraisa, a Jew may not make his living selling these things. So just a moment on what the difference is between an avela and a trefa. In common parlance, when we say something is not kosher, we refer to it as a trefa or treif. That's not strictly true. Not kosher means it doesn't conform to one of many different dietary rules that the Torah puts forth. Technically speaking, a trefa is an animal that has some kind of mortal wound, which means the animal won't live out its year. It's going to die. Like, for example, it has a hole in its lungs or something. That's a trefa. Any animal can be a trefa. But normally a trefa is, we're referring to animals that were shechted, and notwithstanding the fact that they were shechted properly, they're still not kosher because they had some mortal wound, which makes them trefa and forbidden to be eaten. A nevela is an animal that is not just, that didn't get proper shechita. Didn't get proper shechita. So the way to think of it is that all terrestrial mammals are just nevelas waiting to happen. Sooner or later, every domestic animal, cows, goats, sheep, as well as pigs and donkeys and camels, they're all going to be in the nevela sooner or later. Now, there is, on this little highway to that every animal is on his way to becoming a nevela, there is a exit ramp that's available just to kosher species. If a kosher terrestrial animal, like a cow, goat, or sheep, but also, say, a giraffe or whatever, a deer, if that animal gets shechted properly, so then it doesn't become a nevela. It becomes shchuta, it's not a nevela at all. So, in other words, a dead cow may be a nevela, maybe not. It depends if it got shchita. If it got shchita, it's not a nevela. If it happens to have some sort of mortal wound, it could still be a trefa. As far as a dead horse, every dead horse always is a nevela, even if hypothetically you would shecht the horse. But the would be kosher shechita. It's not a kosher shechita because horses are not kosher species. And that being the case, every dead horse is always a nevela. Okay? So we're saying you can't go, so that means, let's sum up here. When you go to the Goyesha shopping market and you pick up some meat from the butcher, whether it's beef or whether it's pork, that meat you're holding in your hand is a nevela. It's nevela meat. Okay? It's a matama, a masa, etc. It's like a nevela. Full blown nevela, whether it's a kosher species or otherwise. So a Jew may not go into business selling horse meat, and he may not go into business selling Shvius, Perek Zayin, Mishnah Dalet, 7-4. The previous Mishnah had said that one may not do Sechora, which is commerce, normal commercial activity, with Bechoros, with firstborn male cows, goats, or sheep, which are to be brought as Korbanos. But if they have a mum, a blemish, which is a permanent blemish, then the animal belongs to a Kohen, but can be eaten as normal food. And in fact, the Kohen could sell or give that animal or the meat to whoever he wishes. It can be eaten by a non-Kohen as well. So our Mishnah here is going to say when one may in fact sell a Bechor as meat, just in a way that should not constitute commercial activity. So the Mishnah says, Lakach Bechor le-mishteh b'no. If a person purchased a bechor, that's an animal for meat, for the sake of his son's party, let's say a wedding, ola regel, or he was planning making a big suda in honor of the holiday, for example, he had a Pesach Seder or something going on, and lo tzarech lo, but then he realizes that he has no need for that bechor after all. He now, mutter lemachro, he is permitted to sell that meat to somebody else. That's not considered normal activity and commercial activity because he purchased it not for the sake of resale. Just now that he has this unnecessary, unusable meat, he's allowed to offload it and sell it to somebody else. The Bartanura says that it's important, so a separate din, that he cannot profit from the sale. That is to say, if he brought it for 100, he can't sell it for more than 100 because that would constitute commercial activity. The Rambam makes no such mention of such a halacha, and the Shulchan Aruch passes like the Rambam, there actually is no requirement to sell it for less than one purchased it for, unlike the Bartanura. The Mishnah continues on now to talk about doing business with non-kosher animals. Besides for Bechoros, we're talking here about a hunter who catches food. So the Mishnah says, Tzadeh chaya ofos v'dagim. If you have a trapper who makes his living catching animals, and the chai are wild animals, ofos, birds, dugim, fish, shnizdamnu lehem minei tameim, they ended up in their traps catching some kind of non-kosher animal. He went out fishing for tuna. He caught a shark. Mutarim lemachran, that fisherman who makes his living catching fish may sell the shark to a non-kosher, you know, to a non-Jewish person for eating the shark. That is permitted because he's not in the business of selling commercially on a normal ongoing basis non-kosher species. You recall from the previous Mishnah, we had said that one can't do that, but this, you know, can't do normal commercial activity, but this is not considered normal commercial activity, says the Tanakhama. Now, the Bar Tanura speaks out that there was a tax put on hunters, like a hunting tax, like a hunting license tax, and much as we saw before, there was a tax put on farmers, and therefore he understands the reason for this leniency is so that the hunters can have the wherewithal to pay for the taxes put upon them. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with Tana Kama, and he is more lenient. He says, "Ach mishnis namna lo lefidarko lokeach mocher." Even a person who's not a professional trapper, and therefore he's not subject to the taxes, according to the Bar Tanura, and therefore he has no reason to be selling these non-kosher animals that he happens to catch in his trap. Says Rabbi Yehuda, he may sell them if it's nisnamna lo lefidarko, if it is happens upon him into his trap, lokeach, or he can even purchase it. That would be one shot in lokeach. He can even purchase it, umocher, and sell it. So he can take that animal he caught, he can sell it on to somebody else. Ublavad shlo tehei umnaso bakach, provided that's not his profession, meaning one cannot make it his profession to catch not kosher animals for consumption, even to sell to non-Jews, but the occasional catch, even by a non-professional trapper, not subject to any taxes, can be sold to non-Jews, and that's okay. V'chacham osram. The chacham disagree with Rabbi Yehuda, and they say no. The non-professional trapper may not sell non-kosher animals he catches by the by to non-Jewish purchasers to eat. Chacham say he may not do that. Exactly how the chacham differ from the Tana Kama is not clear. According to the Bar Tanura, here they're saying that while they're being more lenient, ostensibly, and saying that while the occasional trapper may not sell, but the professional trapper may even go out of his way to, yes, catch a non-kosher species to have the wherewithal to pay the taxes put upon him. Others learn that the chum are actually being stricter, and they're saying that no, even a professional trapper, just like the unprofessional trapper, may not sell non-kosher animals for food, even if they happen upon them, not on purpose. The halacha, however, follows Rabbi Yehuda, the middle mekel shita, meaning a person who catches non-kosher animals may sell them to non-Jews for purchase, even if they're not a professional trapper, even if they're not subject to any taxes. The halacha is a trapper or a fisherman, whoever it is who catches non-kosher animals, can sell on those non-kosher animals to non-Jewish purchasers, provided that he doesn't make a profession of catching midoraisa non-kosher animals for sale.
Shvius Perek Zayin, Mishnah Hay, 7:5. Lulav is zraden v'acharuvin. A lulav is a shoot, a small soft shoot that will become a branch of a tree, much like our lulav, which is the branch, the soft branch that comes out initially out of a palm tree and then will later on become a palm branch, hardened. So if you have what are edible shoots that come from a zraden, the zraden trees, and the charuvin trees, charuvin are carobs, zraden, Bartner learns, is from the plant which gives the uzradin we saw back in Kilayim. Whatever the case, they're edible branches, and therefore yeshlem shvias, they have kedusha shvias. All the restrictions of commercial activity, wasting, etc., apply to these edible shoots. V'ledemein shvias, if one purchases a branch from a carob tree, for example, the money used for that purchase, or from barters exchanging something for the carob branch, so then the thing which one barters gets Kedusha Shvias and has the same restrictions in terms of wasting, consumption, commercial activity, etc. And also Yeshlem Bir, Vladimir Bir, there's also the halachas of Bir that apply to the shoots that come from the Zraden and the Cheruvin carob trees. That is to say that since there will be a time in the winter when there are no longer any Lulavim from these trees available, so then Since animals can't forage on it, there's a mitzvah of Biur. And if one had these lulavin in his house, he'd have to remove them from his house, like the lachas of Biur apply. And v'ladameyam Biur, same goes for the money used to purchase these kinds of shoots. Like anything else that has Biur, once you purchase it with money, the money gets the kedusha and the restrictions of the Shemitah produce, including Biur, meaning that when the time for Biur comes, one would have to either get rid of the coins or destroy them. Lulavi ha'ela va'batna va'tadn. On the other hand, these kind of trees, ela, terebinth, as an ema ka'ela here by Beit Shemesh, va'batna, pistachio perhaps, atadin, another kind of thorny tree that has black berries, yeishlen shvius, v'lodemein shvius, they also have kedusha shvius, because their shoots are also edible, einlem biur, v'lodemein biur, however, they don't have a halach of biur, because they're always lulavin available from the ela, batna, and atadin trees, therefore no biur halach is applied to them, nor to the money that's used to acquire these things. Avala alin yesh biur. But there is a requirement for biur, meaning remove from the house, on the leaves, if one would harvest these leaves of the ela, batna, and atadin, for example, to feed those animals, there would be a requirement to do biur once they're no longer available in the wild, because mipnei shen noshen avian, because literally translated, they fall from their father, meaning the leaves fall from the trees in the wintertime, and therefore there's no more leaves available, and therefore once they're no longer available, the halachas of biur, the requirement for biur, kicks in. Shvius, Perek Zayin, Mishnah Vav, 7-6. This Mishnah discusses certain plants that have strong fragrances. According to Rashi, in Maseches Nida Daf Ches, they were used as one or the other for cooking, one way or the other. The list is Havered, which is a rose, Vahakofer, that's henna, like the henna used for dyeing skin. Vakataf. Kataf is the balsam trees. We're talking about the oil from the balsam tree. Balsam oil. Vahalotem. Art scroll translates as stony pine. Yeshtam shvius, blodameim shvius. They have kedusha shvius, because they're consumed. I was quite convinced that we must be talking about something that goes on the skin. These old things are basically like fragrances for skin, I thought for anointing. I really didn't find anything that said that explicitly, and the Chazon Ish certainly learns it's for eating. I did see Rabbeinu Nassan say it's not, these aren't for eating, but didn't explicitly say they are for skin. So, whatever the case, these things have kedusha shvius because they're consumed by humans. Vila demeim shvius, if you purchase them, they have kedusha shvius. Also, the money has kedusha shvius. Reb Shimon Omer, Ein l'kataf shvius. Reb Shimon says, the oil of the balsam tree doesn't have kedusha shvius, mipnei she'eno pri, because it's not a fruit. That is to say, it's just balsam oil is like sap that comes from the balsam tree. And as sap, it's part of the wood. And wood, we've already said, doesn't have kedusha shvius. It, even if you burn it, it doesn't have kedusha shvius because it's a two-step process. So according to Reb Shimon, the sap of the balsam tree, which is its balsam oil, doesn't have kedusha shvius. The Bartender says the halacha is like Reb Shimon, meaning the halacha is that balsam oil does not have kedusha shvius. However, the Rambam paskins that at least in non-fruit-bearing trees, like a balsam tree, the sap does have kedusha shvius. So ostensibly that would be the halacha, meaning not like Reb Shimon, despite what the Bartender says. Shvius, Perek Zayin, Mishnah Zayin, 7-7. Vered Chadash Shekavshu B'Shemen Yashan. A new rose that has been sitting, soaking in old wine. It's the case here, the Chadash means the seventh year. So this rose is the seventh year Shemitah rose. And it's been soaking in sixth year oil. And the question is, if the taste or the scent of the rose is imparted to the oil, does that now confer Shemitah status, since the rose is a Shemitah rose, to the oil? So the Mishnah says, Yilaket es avered. The words mean pluck out the rose, and that's that. So the Pshat the Bartanura is that provided that the rose is still in its seventh year and the time of beer hasn't arrived, so then one can simply remove the rose, and it doesn't matter that some scent or flavor, ta'am, has been imparted to the oil. Since the time of beer hasn't arrived yet, there's no requirement to be mevayer to destroy or remove, you know, beer, maybe means simply to make heifer, reclaim whatever beer is, there's no obligation to do beer on the oil, provided that the rose was plucked out before the time of beer arrived. On the other hand, if the time of beer had arrived, as the Mishnah will say now, then everything becomes equally restricted in chayv and beer. The way the Mishnah says that, according to Bar Tanura, is the yashan b'chadash, an old one in new, is chayv and beer. What does that mean? So the Bar Tanura understands that the old means this is an old rose, meaning it's a rose, again, from the Shemitah year, that's sitting in chadash, new oil, that's eighth year olive oil. So it's a little confusing for a handful of reasons, but this starts out being confusing already because what used to be called in the previous half of the sentence as chadash, referring to the seventh year, is now chadash, now refers to eighth year. And yashan, which previously referred to sixth year, is now referring to seventh year. I can't tell that. That's the Bartender's upshot. So again, the yashan, an old, meaning seventh year rose, b'chadash, that's sitting in new, meaning eighth year oil. Since now you're in the eighth year and the time for beer has passed, and therefore one should have removed the flowers, the roses from his home, but didn't. So the rose becomes usher because he failed to do beer. And now since the flavor has been imparted from the rose into the oil, so now the oil also has the prohibitions of having not done beer, and the oil, like the rose, becomes must be destroyed because it's the time of beer passed and the beer wasn't done. That's Hapshat the Bar Tanura. The second case of the Mishnah, now we'll, according to the Bar Tanura, say nothing really new. That's the truth. We'll just give a different example of carobs and that are sitting and soaking in wine. And forget the words of the Mishnah. According to the Bar Tanura, the principle is exactly the same, the words notwithstanding, meaning that if the time for beer has passed, then not only the carobs, which are Shemitah carobs, now make not just the carobs forbidden, but also the wine in which they were soaking forbidden. And if the time for beer hadn't yet passed, then as long as you take the carobs out in time, then the carobs have their beer requirement, but the wine remains totally permitted in terms of beer. So that's how the Bar Tanura learns it. Just in case you're wondering, there's a general rule that for kvisha, for soaking, pickling, a solid and a liquid, we assume that it takes 24 hours under normal circumstances for the taste to transfer from the thing, the solid, which is soaking in the liquid, to transfer from the solid to the liquid. So we're assuming that's what's happening here. In any case, the words of the Mishnah now read, Charuvin Chadashim Shekavshin Beyayin Yashan. If you have new carobs, meaning seventh year Shemitah carobs, that have been kavash, that have been stewing in, pickling in, soaking in, yain, that's yashan, old wine, meaning sixth year wine. But the Bar Tanura understands the pshat is that the case is that the time for beer has already passed. Or the yashanim, you have old, meaning seventh year again, carobs, b'chadash, and new, meaning eighth year wine. So then, of course, the time for beer has passed because you're in the eighth year. And that being the case, in both cases, chayavan b'beer, in both cases, since the time for beer has passed on the carobs, both the carobs and the wine have to be removed, you know, have to be destroyed, whatever it is, because the time for beer has lapsed and wasn't done properly. So the cases are different because in the first case, according to Bar Tanura, the cases are different because in the first case, when we had roses in oil, we had said that the two cases were before and after beer. And now the second case here, when we're talking about carobs inside wine, the din is the same, the principle is the same, but the case is, in both cases, the time for beer has already passed for the carobs. That's the Bar Tanura's pshat. It's strange to read in the words. He defends himself by simply saying, and rightly so, that this is explicit, this setup is explicit in a Tosefta. He's following the Tosefta, like the Russian Rosh do, and that being the case, he says, that's the pshat in the Mishnah. What do you want? The Rambam has a totally different read in the Mishnah, and his read resolves the weirdness between the sort of asymmetry of the cases, as well as the asymmetry between Chadash and Yashan. He has a totally different pshat. The Rambam pshat is simply that there is a very big difference between oil and wine, and also between carobs and
roses, and that is simply one of practicality. Is this solid able to impart flavor, scent, taste into this liquid? If yes, then it confers the iser, the beer requirements as well. And if no, then it can't. So Rums simply understands that when it comes to fresh roses, the scent is not very potent. And when it comes to old oil, its ability to absorb scent and flavor is not very good anymore. And that being the case, says the Rambam, when it comes to roses and oil, if the roses are fresh and therefore not potent smelling, and the oil is old and therefore not very receptive to receiving flavor, in such a setup, the rose won't impart flavor to the oil, and therefore there's no obligation in terms of beer with respect to the oil, even if the time for beer has passed. On the other hand, when it comes to old and therefore potent roses that are soaking in fresh oil, which is very receptive to receiving flavor or taste or scent, so then the scent in the roses will be imparted into the oil, and therefore the oil carries the same beer requirements as the roses do. Then in contrast to carob soaking in wine, which at all events, whether the carobs are fresh or old, whether the wine is fresh or old, it doesn't matter. The flavor, after even just one day of sitting carob inside of the wine, there will be carob flavor in the wine, and that being the case, there will be the restrictions of beer on the wine, just as equally applied to the carobs from which the wine received that carob flavor. So that's the Rambam's pshah here. Okay, which doesn't have anything to do with the Tosefta at all, but it resolves some of those various quirks about how the Mishnah is sort of incongruous or asymmetrical. The Mishnah continues on. The Mishnah says, "Zeh klal." This is the principle. Kol shu benosin tam. And this principle here is a principle that would be relevant with respect to all iser, forbidden foodstuffs that are imparting taste to heter, to permitted foodstuffs. So the klal is the principle is in general. Kol shu benosin tam. If there's enough time or quantity for the forbidden item to impart taste, no santam, to give a flavor, to impart taste to what was heter, then chayav leva'er, then there'd be an obligation, like, for example, if we're talking about Shemitah, you'd have to do beer, because it receives its taste and becomes asr also. Min b'she'en omino, in the scenario where you have two different types of foods. So that could be roses in oil, it could be carobs in wine, it could be fish in oil, it could be, you know, pig juice in your chicken soup, etc., etc., etc. All those cases, that's called min b'shein omino. In all these cases, if you have no sentam, if you have an imparting of taste, the taste is discernible in the mixture, you can taste some of the iser present, then the whole thing has restrictions of the iser, in this case, beer, but if it would be, you know, pig juice into your chicken soup, it means that chicken soup is also a benos santam, which we assume is, under normal circumstances, 60 required. If you have 60 times as much chicken soup as pig juice, then you'd assume that there's no way to discern the taste of the pig juice, and therefore wouldn't be benos santam, and it would be batal, meaning that the pig juice and the chicken soup would be annulled and not relevant, and the soup would remain permissible. As opposed to min bimino, now you have two of the same types of foodstuff mixed together. So it could be Shemitah wine with non-Shemitah wine, or it could be nothing with Shemitah at all. It would apply to anything. Like if you have like chalent meat, where it turns out that some of the chalent meat came from an improperly shechted animal and some from a properly shechted animal, but you have chalent meat cooking together in the chalent, whatever the story is. So now you have min bimino, you have meat with meat, and they're sharing tastes. In those cases, kol shehu, according to our Tana here, any amounts of imparting of taste, any amount of mixture of iser with heter makes the whole thing usser. That is to say that, at least according to this Tana, since the meat and the meat have exact same taste, you can't say that the forbidden meat flavor is totally overwhelmed and disappeared and annulled by the heter, the permissible meat, because the taste is still there. It all just tastes like meat. There's no like loss of taste. So at least according to this Tana, which is not lahalacha, but according to this Tana, if you have min bimino, two things that are of the same type of food mixed together,
then even the littlest bit of Isser will make the whole mixture forbidden. In practice, really, we paskin bapashas that when it comes to min bamino mixtures, so then midoraisa, you need just to rove heter, the majority should be heter of the mixture, and their bottom we still want to 60 times, but that's all, not more than that. Now, the Mishnah then says, specifically with Shvius, when it comes to Shemitah produce, as opposed to any generic Isurim like Makosher meat or pig juice, etc., when it comes to Shvius, that's Oseres Bokol Shehu Bemina. Similarly, if you have two of the same type of foodstuff mixing together, let's say, for example, Shemitah wine and non-Shemitah wine mixing together, so it says even the littlest bit of Shemitah wine will make the whole mixture restricted as with Shemitah restrictions, meaning, for example, that you, once the bartender speaks out, it's once the time for beer has passed, then the restrictions kick in totally, and you wouldn't be able to, you know, deal with this wine mixture commercially, and you wouldn't be able, you'd have a chi of a beer, etc., etc. Vishalobamina, if you have two different types of foods, Shemitah foods, mixing together, like the first part of our Mishnah with the, for example, the carobs and the wine, etc., then benosan tam, then it all just depends on whether or not the taste of the forbidden component, meaning the taste of the carobs, let's say, is discernible in the wine. If it is, then, and you'd need 60 times just in normal circumstances of, if you have less than 60 times wine to the carobs, for example, then you have carob flavor in the wine, and then once you've passed the time of beer, then the whole mixture is required to be removed, and since you didn't do beer properly, destroyed, both the carobs and the wine, which has the carob flavor inside of it. So the truth is that lahalacha, we say if it's min bamino, it isn't kolshu. Really, you would need to have midaraisa rov and midarabana 60 times. But when it comes to Shemitah, we are more strict. And after the time of biur has passed, then if you're talking about a min bamino mixture, two of the same types, so again, we are strict and are strict even. I believe for a kol shehu, then have any taste at all, like the Mishnah says.